Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow wherever you are. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
This episode is brought to you by AG1. Treat yourself with a little love and get those nutrients, vitamins, probiotics, and adaptogens into your life. The easiest way to do it is with a glass of AG1 every day. If you want to take ownership of your health, it starts with AG1. Try AG1 now, and you'll get a free welcome kit that includes a shaker bottle, canister, and metal scoop, along with 5 free travel packs and a free 1-year supply of vitamin D3 plus K2, all with your first purchase. Go to drinkag1.com/backbench. That's drinkag1.com/backbench. Hey, it's Matea, reminding you that this show cannot be made without you. If you've been thinking about becoming a Canada Land supporter, we're having a pretty great sale right now. You'll get premium ad-free feeds of all Canada Land shows, discounts on merch from our store, and exclusive bonus episodes, like a behind-the-scenes tour of the federal budget lockup, more of Boris Johnson's trip to Canada, and of course, more of us yapping about what's hot in politics right now. We want to make it as easy as possible for you to become a Canada Land supporter. So from now until the end of May, we have a special offer for our listeners. Sign up now for just $2 a month for the next 6 months. Just go to canadaland.com/join or click the link in your show notes to become a supporter today. Hey, this is Matea Roach. We're bringing you something special today from our friends at Commons, a documentary podcast that dives into systems of power within Canada. Over 13 seasons, Commons has exposed Canada's foundational reliance on monopolies, our addiction to real estate, and the dark side of hockey. In their new season, host Archie Mann is now dissecting the state of work in Canada to ask, how did we get here? The episode we're sharing with you today looks at the pylon of challenges that threaten nurses in this country, from understaffing, underpay, private agencies, lack of equipment, and safety issues. And here in Ontario, our provincial policies have not been helping. We'll be back with a new Backbench episode in 2 weeks, but until then, enjoy the episode and follow Commons in your podcast app of choice to listen to episode 3 tomorrow.
Now, I want you to think back to what you were feeling 4 years ago, right when COVID-19 shut down the world.
All of Italy is now on lockdown. All of Italy is now on lockdown.
Close to 40,000 people in Spain have now been infected with the virus, the death toll standing at 2,000.
Canada has now confirmed its first death from coronavirus.
Quebec's premier has described the situation as a national emergency.
A surreal but welcome sight. Members of the Canadian Armed Forces are now deployed to a public long-term care residence in Montreal.
There was so much that we didn't know back then. How did this disease spread? What could be the long-term consequences if you caught it? And just how deadly was this thing? Some of us were laid off. Some of us worked from home. Others kept going to their jobs because they were deemed essential. And we called them heroes. But then there were the hospital workers. The risks that they took were of an entirely different variety. They were on the front lines, exposing themselves to this deadly new pathogen every day. Nadira Ross was one of those people. She's a nurse at Hennick Bridgepoint Hospital on the east side of Toronto. And when we spoke to her at her home in Scarborough, she could still recall the fear that she and her coworkers felt just doing their jobs.
We come in and everybody's dressed up, mask, gown. Some people wear goggles because you didn't know the extent of the infections.
Despite her fears that she could catch the virus, she still went every day.
I love my job. If I didn't go, what would happen to people?
Nadira, who is now in her early 60s, took on some of the riskiest jobs at the hospital.
We were the first unit in Bridgepoint Hospital to take in the people suffered from brain injury from COVID. And we were the first unit in the hospital to take those patients. Because I worked through SARS, so I had a really good idea of how to deal with isolation and all the restrictions. Secondly, I was one of the oldest nurses there, and we had all these young girls with families. And I said, you know what? I'll go. I'll do it. If I get sick, I don't have little children. You guys have young children. You know, let me go in. Let me deal with it, see how it is.
And this was the time when we were all celebrating healthcare workers, with people banging their pots and pans outside their windows to acknowledge their sacrifices.
They're asking communities across the province and the country to join them in a doorway salute.
Let's take another moment to thank those who sacrificed so much for the good of all of us. Our country will be forever grateful, and we will continue to be here to support you every step of the way.
That was then.
We got free food, free skincare products, hand creams.
Today, things are very different.
And then that disappeared, and not even thank you after that.
Over the last few years, hospitals across the country have been pushed to the breaking point. In Ontario, where Nadira works, emergency rooms have been overflowing. Some have even had to shut down because they can't safely operate.
There have been 868 ER closures so far this year because of staffing shortages.
And the story is the same across Canada. Even though Ontario has one of the worst records, emergency rooms in every single province across the country have experienced shutdowns. So what the hell is happening here? The truth is that this healthcare crisis is in actuality a labor crisis. And not the kind of so-called labor shortage that chambers of commerce like to gripe on about. This is a crisis caused by the mistreatment of workers, chronic underpay, and the rise of predatory gig work platforms. Nurses are leaving their jobs in droves, leaving hospitals understaffed and sometimes unable to carry out their most basic obligations. On this episode, we'll tell you how nursing went from a profession hailed as heroic to one in an utter state of crisis, all through the eyes of a woman who lived through it all. I'm Arshi Mann, and this is Commons. More after the break.
This episode is brought to you by AG1. Eat your greens. Get in those veggies. That's what I've always been told to do. And I really do try. Like, I genuinely love vegetables. I love a good roast sweet potato. But sometimes, especially when I'm traveling, it's easier said than done to eat your veggies. When you're on the road, you know you're gonna have to have some fast food. It's just inevitable. But I have a solution to counteract this, and it's AG1. It's chock full of 75 vitamins, nutrients, probiotics, adaptogens, you name it. It's an extra boost of nutrition for when you're a little low. I'm a stan. You'll even catch me at the gym wearing the AG1 crew neck. If you want to take ownership of your health, it starts with AG1. Try AG1 now, and you'll get a free welcome kit that includes a shaker bottle, canister, and metal scoop, along with 5 free travel packs and a free 1-year supply of vitamin D3 plus K2, all with your first purchase. Go to drinkag1.com/backbench. That's drinkag1.com/backbench. Check it out.
Nadira Ross first came to Canada from Guyana in 1980 when she was just 17 years old. Like many immigrants, she had to do a lot of manual labor to get by.
It was always factory work. You come into Canada, it didn't matter how much education you had. You had to start in a factory because nobody would hire you. You didn't have no Canadian experience.
Alongside factory work, she was also a hairdresser for many years. But she knew that she wanted to do something different with her life. And after living in Canada for about 7 years, she figured out what that was. One day, Nadira's father had to make a visit to the hospital.
I took my father to the hospital and I watched the nurses hang an IV, and I said, wow, And the way she did it so quickly and so efficiently, I thought, I can do that. And I thought, this was the ideal thing to do.
So Nadira went to nursing school and became a registered practical nurse, the lowest rung on the nursing ladder. By this point, she was a single mother, so she had to balance her new career with raising a family. But she took to the challenge immediately.
So I did, and I loved it. I loved every minute of it, never regretted one moment of being a nurse.
In some ways, Nadira's timing couldn't be worse. The 1990s were an extremely difficult era to be a healthcare worker in Ontario. It started out with the Ray days. Under NDP Premier Bob Ray, public sector workers were forced to take unpaid days off in order to reduce costs for the government, which made it very difficult for a young nurse to break in. And then came PC Premier Mike Harris's common sense revolution.
The government balanced its books. Operating budgets were cut by almost $1.3 billion, just as hospitals had to deal with restructuring. The result? A lot of staff lost their jobs.
As part of a broader austerity campaign, Harris's government slashed funding to healthcare, closing over 11,000 hospital beds, 39 hospitals, and laying off 6,000 nurses. By the late 90s, when Harris's healthcare cuts were sinking in, Nadira had upgraded her credentials to become a registered nurse, or RN. By then, she was raising two kids by herself, but she still couldn't find a full-time position. Instead, she worked for a nursing agency.
It's an organization that hires on nurses who wants to work outside of their everyday, regular, full-time job. So you go with an agency and you pick up shift, what we call moonlighting. If a nurse is a moonlighting, they go with the agency and they will pick up an extra shift.
In the decades ahead, nursing agencies would become central to today's healthcare labor crisis. But back in the mid-90s, when Nadira was an agency nurse, things were slightly different. Most of the time, an agency nurse would come in to cover a shift for someone who was sick or on a temporary leave.
It was difficult because you walk in as an agency nurse, of course, you'll get the heaviest assignment, number one. Number two, the staff are not as friendly. They're all busy. Nobody wants to take the time to teach you anything. You knew, you're young at this. You had to learn how to figure things out very quickly. Mind you, it also helped you to build a skill set that other people doesn't have. You learn diplomacy.
As the financial pressures of Ray Days and Mike Harris's healthcare cuts compounded, thousands of Ontario nurses took better-paying jobs in the U.S. So for Nadira's entire career, there had been a lack of nurses because governments haven't been willing to pay the necessary wages or provide enough funding to create new positions.
But there was always a shortage in nursing. I don't think there's ever a time, because if you don't have enough funding, you will not employ as much staff.
And another major factor for why there's not enough nurses is because the job is damn hard. Many people simply leave the profession. Nursing is one of the most physically taxing professions out there.
Nursing is really hard on the human body. It's a lot of lifting. You're very tired. It's mentally and physically exhausting. It took a toll, like, you know, being a parent, coming home, family life. It was very, very tough. One of the reasons why nobody wants to do bedside nursing is not because you don't want to clean a patient. It's just because when you realize how hard it is on your bodies.
And all of that work can have severe consequences.
Nurses, they would never talk about it. You know how many nurses, they get miscarriage because of the lifting and the pulling?
And this isn't just anecdotal. A 2012 study by the National Institutes of Health in the U.S. found that nurses who handle cancer drugs were twice as likely to experience a miscarriage. And a Danish study from 2019 that surveyed night shift workers, mostly hospital nurses, found that they were also substantially more likely to miscarry.
How many nurses have bladder issues? A huge, huge percentage. Nobody talks about it. It's a female thing. Nobody wants to talk about it. But it's because of standing all day, lifting, pulling, pushing. Nobody talks about these things. And there is not a nurse that does not have back injuries, shoulder injuries, knee, you know, joint injuries from nursing because of the type of work you do. It doesn't matter whether you work in ICU, you work in eMERGE, you work in rehab, you work in chronic care. It's all exactly the same because you have to lift and you have to pull and you have to shove.
And another factor that drives people out of the profession is the everyday dangers.
because nurses like Nadira face almost as much violence as police officers. A 2021 survey by the Canadian Federation of Nurses Unions found that of the 4,500 nurses surveyed, 93% said that they'd experienced some sort of violence in the previous year, including verbal abuse, physical assaults, and sexual harassment.
Right now, I work with brain injury patients, and they are violent, especially if they were drug users and things like that. So their brain is really messed up. So they would punch you, they would spit at you, they would kick you. And the verbal abuse is tremendous in nursing. Physical and verbal is very, very much present.
And it's not just from patients. Family members of patients can also be a very real threat. There's one incident in particular that Nadira still thinks about.
One time, when I was a very young nurse, when a man told me, I'm going to shoot you because I wouldn't do what he wanted for his mother, which was totally wrong. Do you know he was picked up on gun charges like 2 weeks later? Nobody in management ever asked me, are you okay? Even though I reported it.
In a hospital, a code white is when someone's being violent. And Nadira says that it's rare for a week to go by without at least one code white being called.
The violence is a lot. It takes a lot on your mental capacity. For nurses, I see it more and more every day. Like, you hear now, it's like, I'm just so tired of this. I don't need this nonsense anymore. That's quite a common comment. I don't need this nonsense anymore. Why am I doing this?
Nursing has always been difficult. But in Ontario, the combination of the Ford government's policies, the pandemic, and the push towards privatization have led to a full-blown healthcare crisis. It started before COVID in 2019. That year, Doug Ford passed Bill 124, which capped wage increases for all public sector workers at a measly 1%. That salary freeze came shortly before broken supply chains ended up making everything more expensive. And during the pandemic, while we were clanging our pots and pans in gratitude for healthcare workers, nurses were struggling to make ends meet.
We saw increase in prices of everything during the pandemic. Nurses did not get an increase. I was in a meeting where the girl said she can barely put food on the table. She's a single parent with 3 children. Because not getting an increase for so long and the increase of prices, she barely fed her kids and paid the rent. Nothing extra for anything else. And then you go back to pay. Nurses in the United States are making $125 an hour doing exactly what I do. And I don't make $50 an hour. I just came from the States last weekend, and my cousins, when I tell them how much I make, they just looked at me. Really?
And remember, that pay cap was introduced before the pandemic. So when COVID-19 hit with full force, nurses and other healthcare workers put their lives on the line, knowing full well that they weren't even entitled to decent raises after everything was said and done. Nadira says that before the pandemic, even though there was an overall shortage of nurses, her hospital was always fully staffed.
Now we work short just about every day. When you're supposed to have 7 staff, you will have 6. Sometimes you don't go on break, you don't have a coffee break, sometimes you don't have a lunch break due to working with less staff.
And hospitals have been trying to address the situation through a number of ways. At the top of the list is bringing in personal support workers, or PSWs, in an attempt to fill the gaps. But PSWs are not nurses, and they're not qualified to do so many of the essential tasks that nurses do.
So what they do, they just wash the patient, and you're still left with 7 or 8 patients to give medication to, which impacts your mental capacity because you have to be more careful. You're picking up extra patients. You have to give more medication, and you have to be more on your, I would say, P&Qs, like just be more mindful of everything you do.
And this doesn't just impact nurses. This has serious consequences on patient care.
A PSW does not have the assessment skill as an RN or an RPN. So obviously, if they wash a patient, you don't know if the patient has a wound or a skin breakdown, how are they assessing it? They won't even tell you. Again, their agency, they just come for the day and they're gone. They don't care what happens after. As a nurse, you don't have time to go and check that patient's skin, which is your responsibility to do. But you're giving medication to 7 patients. You don't have time. You'd rely on that person to watch that patient so you don't see. They definitely will not get the same kind of care if you didn't have that.
But this increased reliance on PSWs is only one part of the problem. There's another dynamic at play. Nursing agencies. Remember, nursing agencies are the private companies that hospitals will call up to bring in a replacement nurse on short notice. The problem is that these agencies have no longer become a last resort. As hospitals have been increasingly unable to maintain a full complement of nurses, they become increasingly reliant on these agencies. Some of these companies have been around for decades, but a whole host of new agencies, like Staffy, pitch themselves as Uber, but for nursing. Now, this has all kinds of obvious pernicious effects. First off, there's the problem that nurses who only drop in for a day can't provide the same kind of care that nurses who are there every day observing a patient's progress can do.
That's what we call continuity of care. We have no continuity of care when you have a lot of agencies coming in. It's lacking that, and that is where you have people with wounds and a lot of skin breakdown. Thankfully, the hospital I work at, they're really good at monitoring it, so you don't see as much of that. But patients that we have coming into us from other facilities come in with wound care and skin breakdown and not being turned enough and not paying attention. And if you don't have the time to do it, it will happen.
These are avoidable injuries caused by being in a hospital, the place that people come to get better. And this increasing reliance on gig work in nursing is costing our healthcare system so much money. The numbers are pretty staggering. According to a report by Ontario's Auditor General, the number of hours worked by agency nurses doubled in just 1 year. In Northern Ontario, it was significantly more. The AG examined a number of Toronto area hospitals, and he found that hospitals paid up to $106 an hour to nursing agencies. Now, around $75 of that would go to the nurse, but more than $30 to the nursing agency itself. Now, a permanent nurse makes around $35 to $50 an hour. That means that just the money going to the private for-profit agency could almost cover the cost of a staff nurse. And that's just Ontario. Before the pandemic, Vancouver Coastal Health only spent $25,000 on agency nurses. In 2022, they spent $6.2 million. That is 248 times more. In a recent Globe and Mail investigation showed that some health units in New Brunswick and Newfoundland and Labrador paid out more than $300 an hour to nursing agencies. Most of that money is going to a private for-profit middleman, and it's money that could be spent on patient care, on permanent reliable staffing, and on equipment. And this move towards gig work is further exacerbating the nursing shortage. It simply no longer makes sense for a lot of nurses to even try to get a staff job. I mean, why would you? And that leads to more staff nurses quitting their jobs, which leads to more staffing shortages and an even greater reliance on agencies. It becomes a spiral. The irony, of course, is that if different choices were made, if nurses were provided with adequate raises and better working conditions, then it's unlikely that hospitals would even need to rely on agencies like they do. Or we could institute different systems. After all, public schools don't rely on private agencies who take a major cut of money to bring in substitute teachers. Now, across the country, provincial governments will appeal to fiscal prudence when nurses and other healthcare workers push for raises, while simultaneously, they're creating a system in which hospitals end up forking over eye-popping amounts of money to private sector middlemen. For Nadira, this whole situation, frankly, leaves her baffled.
I still cannot understand it. I don't understand it. You have to do things to retain, to keep your nurses, and they're not doing enough.
Nadira is a union steward at Hennick Bridgepoint. And the nurses' union has often asked basic questions like, how much money is spent on nursing agencies?
I go to all these meetings and I listen to them, but nobody gives you an answer. I still do not know how much they pay for an agency staff that comes into our hospital because they would not give us that number. We're underpaid, we're understaffed, ill-equipped, and no respect.
Nadira says that in her experience, layoffs tend to come from the ranks of frontline workers.
And the first place they will cut, instead of cutting from the upper management, they always cut from the bottom. The cleaners, the nurses, the people who do all the hard work, and the people that are needed. And a lot of people who make these decisions, they have no experience. They have never cleaned a room. They have never turned a patient. I've many times asked them, why don't you come and spend a day with one of our nurses? Oh, well, we don't have time for that. I said, you should make the time. I have put that out many, many times. Come on out and spend a day. Just follow one of our nurses and see what we do. Never, never, never would they do that.
For Nadira, there's one specific piece of equipment that epitomizes so many of the problems of being a healthcare worker today, that embodies the choices that governments make, the physical labor of nursing, and the reduced care for patients. The commode chair.
Commode chair is a chair that you put a patient on with wheels and has a seat where they can go over the toilet.
And at Nadira's hospital, they simply never have enough.
You're supposed to have one in each room at least. Now we have to go from room to room, find one, clean it, put the patient on it, and then clean it after, you know. We've been asking for the last 5 years or more, give us more. We need more.
Commode chairs aren't expensive. You can go into Amazon right now and buy one for less than $100.
If a patient calls saying, I need to go to the bathroom for a number two, right? You have to go look for the commode chair. If they're all being used, the patient is going to go in their underwear. If you find one, you bring it, you have to take time to clean. So you got to look for it. You have to clean it. Then you get the patient. By the time you get to the patient to the washroom, you might end up with stool all over the floor. These are one piece of equipment that is so important to get somebody from doing a bowel movement in their bed to the toilet, which should take 5 minutes. It takes you 25 minutes. And you talk about dignity. It's totally lost there, you know?
Even during this moment of crisis in our healthcare system, it can be difficult to get nurses and other healthcare workers to talk about what's going wrong. Many fear retaliation. And so I asked Nadira why she decided to be so open and honest with us.
Come August, I've done my 25 years into my pension and I can leave. You know what? It needs to be heard. People need to know the facts. People only hear bits and pieces. Nobody asked the right questions. You guys asked the right questions, so we're able to give you the answers. I'm at the end of the line, so it doesn't matter for me. I can speak. But for people, young nurses who have families and cannot afford to lose their job, it's very, very difficult for people to just walk away from their jobs.
And I asked Nadira if a young person asked her whether or not they should embark on a career in nursing. What would she say?
No. I always say no. I never encourage my kids to become nurses. The work is too hard. The money I make as a nurse, I can make more than that doing something else. You're working shifts. You're working long hours. You end up with so many injuries. You have to work for 30 years, 25 to 30 years before you can retire. And you're all broken. When I retire as a nurse, I will have a bad back, bad shoulder, bad knees. Would I encourage anybody? No, I don't encourage people. But I always say, you'll guarantee a job, you'll guarantee a paycheck. It depends on what you want out of life. But as a young person, you have so much options. Us as immigrants who came into this country, we had to settle. We had to take what we got to enable to make a better life because we came with nothing.
That's your episode of Commons. If you like this episode,
please leave us a rating and review in Apple Podcasts. This episode relied on work done by Tuthan Ha, Kelly Grant, and Stephanie Chambers at The Globe and Mail, Mike Crawley at CBC News, Avis Favreau at CTV News, the Ontario Health Coalition, and many others. If you want to get in touch with us, you can tweet us at CommonsPod. You can also email me, arshi@canadaland.com. This episode was produced by me, Noor Azria, and Jordan Cornish. Our production coordinator is Andre Proulx. Our editor-in-chief is Karen Puglesi, and our music is by Nathan Burley. You can listen to Commons ad-free on Amazon Music, included with Prime. If you value this podcast, please support us. We rely on listeners like you paying for journalism, and as a supporter, you will get premium access to all of our shows ad-free, including early releases and bonus content. You'll also get our exclusive newsletter, discounts on CanadaLand merch, invites and tickets to our live and virtual events, and more than anything, you'll be a part of the solution to Canada's journalism crisis. And you'll be keeping our work free and accessible to everybody else. Come join us. Click the link in your show notes or go to canadaland.com/join.
Hey, it's Matea, reminding you that this show cannot be made without you. If you've been thinking about becoming a CanadaLand supporter, we're having a pretty great sale right now. You'll get premium ad-free feeds of all CanadaLand shows, discounts on merch from our store, and exclusive bonus episodes, like a behind-the-scenes tour of the federal budget lockup, more of Boris Johnson's trip to Canada, and of course, more of us yapping about what's hot in politics right now. We want to make it as easy as possible for you to become a CanadaLand supporter. So from now until the end of May, we have a special offer for our listeners. Sign up now for just $2 a month for the next 6 months. Just go to canadaland.com/join or click the link in your show notes to become a supporter today.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.